Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Tuesday here on Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and for one more day this week, Schomburg Stu is joining me.
Ready to enjoy the rain and wonderful weather in the Chicago area.
So, all right, well, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu and I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, so you can look for a brand new one of those tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you can hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Maybe next time we have Stu back, he'll be on Twitter, but not quite yet. Of course, you can find me there at Burke Time, and as always, forward me those Stu messages, and I will pass them along, and we'll see how it goes. So there you go.
All right.
Oh. All right. Now, you know, I we don't cover a lot of college sports here. We don't talk about a lot of college sports here. But I did notice today, a lot of buzz about the University of Louisville, and they're talking about how they have to vacate wins going all the way back to the 2011-2012 season through the 2014-2015 season. Now, interestingly, this includes their national championship, which was 2013. When it comes to this kind of stuff, does it really matter that they're vacating these wins? I mean, what are we, there's just what, no national champion for 2013? I mean, granted, I know they had some shady stuff going on, but they won the damn thing, and I find it hard to believe they were the only team that had shady stuff going on. I don't really understand that. Couldn't they have put an asterisk there? So.
Yeah, that's a funny to do that after so many years have gone by, 4 or 5 years have gone by. But did they specify what the infractions were?
They had so much stuff going on there. Believe it or not, this one article here on MSN.com actually uses the term student athlete. Apparently they had some guys who were ineligible during all those seasons academically. So, and the NCAA rule requires that the university return the money to the NCAA that they got through their conference and the NCAA tournament. And now Louisville was in the tournament all four of those years, 2012 to 2015. They don't have a dollar figure on what that should be, but I think that's a bigger penalty than anything. So yeah, it just looks like they had some, ineligible players, but you and I have mentioned it here, many times, how many of these guys are actually eligible.
Yeah, I wonder if they would do a study throughout the United States, how many more they would come up with of ineligible players academically.
And now they do go on to talk a little bit about the wonderful parties they had, and they mention here that the Louisville director of basketball operations, they don't give his name, I forgot what it was, but they used the term acted unethically, as I thought that was humorous, as he arranged striptease dances and sex acts for prospects, student athletes, and others. Yeah, I think we kind of knew that was unethical, but thanks for pointing that out for us. So.
Yeah, well, I heard that those students were majoring in pornography, so maybe it was okay to do that.
Yeah, was it filmmaking, maybe? They were studying how to do that kind of stuff?
Adult film majors, they're majoring in that category at Louisville.
Yeah. Now, the article does go on to point out, they mention that Memphis was forced to vacate all their wins from the 2007-2008 season due to issues with Derrick Rose's eligibility. They actually, I believe it, they beat Kansas in the championship game. So that had to go away. And then they bring up USC football, which was stripped of a BCS national championship in 2004-2005. So, you know, not the first time, not the last time we're going to see this. I'm just kind of baffled. You know, like, I know they took the Heisman away from Reggie Bush that year. You know, now Louisville isn't a national champion. I mean, does anybody really see it that way? I mean, when they say, hey, who won the 2003 basketball championship in college? Everybody's going to still say Louisville, right? I mean, this doesn't
– what's not going
to
change
what's the biggest thing? They have to take the banner down? Is that the biggest issue?
Yeah, it looks like the biggest issue is going to be the money they get to return.
Yeah.
Did they mention the amount? Any kind of amount? No amount mentioned, though.
No, they don't give a dollar here. So, you know, we'll have to have to see how that works out. I mean, you know, in the end, and I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on at Louisville. It did end up costing Rick Pitino his job. It probably should have cost him it a lot sooner than it did, but you know, you get a good basketball coach like that, and you know, you don't want to lose guys. I mean, he is a quality college basketball coach. He had his struggles at the pro level, but just one of those things. But yeah,
I'm gonna defend Louisville because this is not as bad as point shaving.
No, well, I guess lining up, you know, dancers for your students could be considered pretty bad, but yeah, I mean, it didn't, you know, they didn't try to lose, I guess, or keep a game close, because not all those games were lost. So yeah, it's, you know, there's some shady stuff, and I wonder, like, now, you know, what's actually going on, you know, when you see these things. So I know just the other day they had a game. You know, Kansas, West Virginia played at Kansas, and I was wondering what was going on there, because Kansas shot 35 free throws in the game and West Virginia shot 2. So there was obviously something shady going on there.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very good, does it, when something like that happens?
So,
talk about a disparity in free throws, huh? 35 against 2.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That's almost inconceivable.
You know, and I know, you know, I mean, the home team will normally always shoot more free throws. You know, that's kind of a given. But a discrepancy like that is just, that's difficult to overlook. I mean, you wonder how they even managed to get that by. And to no surprise, the West Virginia coach ended up getting himself ejected because, you know, after a while, he just couldn't take it. And I don't blame him there for that. I would have snapped too. That was just ridiculous. So
how many points did Kansas win the game by?
Oh, let me see if I can hunt that down, because I'm trying to remember if it was a game from yesterday or if it was a couple days ago that it happened. So
because if it was a relatively close game, I mean, that was really
Kansas won 77-69, so only by 8 points with all those extra free throws.
Yeah, I wonder if there'll be any kind of an investigation because of that, the referees in that game.
So, yeah, you know, you always wonder, you know, how the refs are, you know, kind of chosen or kind of set up. And, you know, obviously there was definitely something shady going on there. I mean, there's just no other way to really look at it.
That's about the worst example I've ever heard. I mean, I've never heard one that difference, that disparity ever. I've heard of disparities, but not like that.
Yeah, Kansas did shoot 74.3% on those free throws. West Virginia split theirs. They only made one of the two they had. So.
Yeah. Well, what percent was that?
50.
I just can't. Very good. Checking your mathematical ability, and that's good. You got it right.
I didn't have to cheat. I was looking at the box score, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have to try
okay.
to figure it. So. Just one of those easier things for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if anything was in the local papers about it, the West Virginia that covered the reporters that covered the games, the sports reporters, if it was mentioned.
Yeah, I'm sure they there was quite a bit of talk about that, you know, locally or however they do it. So
you can see one team driving to the basketball, to the basket more than the other team, which caused that difference, but not that kind of a difference.
No, well, you know, and like even interesting, when I was seeing the story, they were showing some highlights of, West Virginia players driving that, you know, stuff that could have been called fouls. I mean, just depending on how how the refs are calling it that night. You know, some nights they let guys play, other nights they call seemingly everything. But these could have easily been foul calls, you know, and you just wonder, they didn't show any of the fouls on the Kansas players. So you wonder if maybe, you know, they were calling it one way and not the other.
You would think so.
So, but yeah, you know, that'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see if there's any, you know, any type of punishment or, you know, condemnation of these refs. You know, I know sometimes after the fact, leagues or conferences will come out and say, you know, hey, look, they blew it. I know the NBA is notorious for that, coming out and say, well, you know, they missed this call here. Well, it doesn't matter. Now the game's over.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, thanks. No.
Something that should have had one team win instead of the other, and they'll come up with a saying, we're sorry that it happened, but the game's over. Too late. Can't reverse it now.
You know, yeah, we're not going to go back and replay it. But here's what happened. Oh, okay. Thank you. I don't. You know, what do you say to that? It's like, okay. Yeah.
Wasn't there a baseball game a few years ago in which they actually had a go back and start the game where the problem occurred and finish it that way rather than what actually happened in the field?
Yeah, I believe it was one of the few games where a team's protest was actually upheld. You know, most of the protests in baseball either get dropped or they're denied.
Right.
But yeah, I vaguely remember it, but it seems like for some reason, it seems like it was quite a, you know, 5 or 6 years ago.
At least.
But I could be wrong there. I don't remember. Yeah, yeah.
It's not even longer than that, but yeah, but this, something like this, they wouldn't go back and change. They're not gonna go back. Well, it should have been 18 fouls instead of two, so let's go back and give them 50% of their fouls. Yeah, there's no point in time they could actually get that game restarted. That's just a horrible miscarriage of justice, it seems to me.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I just wonder if there'll be some type of, you know, if the refs will be spoken to or how they'll possibly work it out. I know in some cases they're suspended from games, but my biggest concern, I would worry that they had quite a different motive there, because even with that big time free throw discrepancy, it was still a very close game. So I would start to wonder if maybe, you know, they had, possibly a little money on that line there.
Boy, that certainly would destroy the ethics of college basketball if it ever came out that happened.
Yeah. So, but I did find something that, baseball related that I knew you would find very interesting. We finally had somebody talk to Jake Arrieta. You know, there weren't, you know, very, very many takers, but apparently the Phillies engaged in what they describe as dialogue with Jake Arrieta. The problem, of course, is there's a gap between sides because, as we know, Arrieta wants $200 million, which he's not going to get at this point. And you just wonder if the, you know, the Phillies were maybe that team who, you know, poked it out there and said, hey, you want to come pitch here for a year and then go back on the free agent market? Or how that worked out. But, yeah, there's, you know, nowhere close to signing. It's just what they somebody finally contacted him, and I thought that was kind of interesting because we haven't heard any teams at all reaching out to him. So
if he does wind up signing with Philadelphia, you know it's going to be for a lesser amount, lesser number of years. Does he pull the plug on Scott Boras?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of baffled on why a lot of these guys are still with him. You know, I know he's got the reputation of getting guys, you know, that big money, but in the end, you know, I mean, spring training's been up and running. I mean, for pitchers for, you know, a week plus now. So, Arrieta's already behind. You know, you've got to wonder, you know, what's he been selling? You know, he doesn't seem to be really doing his job. I mean, you know, even, you know, J.D. Martinez was a client, took less money than what was originally offered because they overplayed their hand. You know, and again, you know, if Arrieta's sitting on thinking he's getting $200 million in a contract, he's not playing this year. Nobody's giving him that. That market is not there anymore.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe he needs to be with an agent who's a little more realistic.
Yeah, maybe he'll wind up with a four-year deal for about 100, is my guess, something 110, which is what the Cubs, which, by the way, is what the Cubs offered him, last-minute deal.
Yeah.
Wasn't it there around that same thing, 110?
Yeah, it was, you know, you figure it had to be pretty close to what, you know, what Darvish was getting, you know, what he ended up signing for. So, but, yeah, I just, you know, I don't know. I, at this point in time, I don't know what the heck they're,
it's baffling,
you know, what he's, you know, what he's looking for, what he's waiting for. I mean, if he's supposed to be the great pitcher he thinks he is, you know, he should take the one-year deal and go out and prove it. You know, I mean, if he went out and won, you know, 18 games with a team, you know, he could easily prove that he was worth that money. Somebody would probably give it to him.
Yeah, they would. And well, he had a lot of problems during the last season in terms of longevity and finishing more than five innings of the game, control issues, everything else. Now, getting a late start if he does wind up signing, how's that going to affect his performance this year?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the question on all those guys is, you know, how will it, you know, these guys that are still hanging around out there, you know, yeah, and, you know, that was the thing. I mean, you know, his walks were up last year. Well, actually, they were down from 2016, but they were up from his Cy Young year. You know, his strikeouts were down, but, you know, like you mentioned, his innings were way down. You know, like the year he won the Cy Young, he pitched 229 innings. The next year when the Cubs won it all, he was 18-8. He pitched 197 innings. Last year he only pitched 168 and a third. You know, it's you know, he's kind of going the wrong way. And I know they're pushing, you know, the 2 years before that. But if I'm a team, I'm looking at, you know, what the hell is going on now. You know, I mean, the ERA has went up the last 3 years. The win totals have came down, you know, and I mean, he, you know, all his categories are going the wrong way. I mean, I get it. He wants to cash in because this will be his one long-term big money deal. But, you know, he was 14-10 and his ERA was up 40 points from the year from 2016.
Yeah, he's gone to downhill every last 2 years. I noticed, and maybe you could tell me this, you play college ball. I noticed that in a lot of games when he only went five and a third innings, there were a lot of foul balls hit off of him, which, of course, added to the amount of number of pitches he threw during the course of the game. What would cause something like that?
It could be that, you know, now that everybody has seen him for multiple years in a Cub uniform, you know, they have a better read on him or a better release point, or, you know, pitchers obviously have tendencies, you know, depending on the count, on what they like to throw, and, you know, how it works out. So it may be just the fact that guys have a little better read on him. You know, it's kind of the theory, you know, we talked about when a rookie comes up and he gets off to a fantastic start and, you know, he's hitting 380 and, you know, homers every other game and everybody thinks, oh yeah, you know, this is the next, you know, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. And then the league catches up to him and he hits 100 for the next month because they know what he is. It's a little akin to that. So.
And how many times have we seen that with an everyday player? I can think of a few names off the top, but we've talked about that before.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like the difficult thing looking at Arrieta's stats here, the year he won the Cy Young, he gave up 10 home runs. 2016, he gave up 16. Last year, he gave up 23.
And
he gave up more home runs than less.
Yeah, that's a concern.
So,
and that's a good point, though, you mentioned about the league catching up to you. In prior years, let's say on a two-strike count, he would strike the batter out. In this year, the batter would protect the plate, knowing what's coming, and foul the ball off, accounting maybe for all those foul balls that I mentioned that they seemed to hit against him last season.
Yeah, and well, you know, like the interesting thing with him is he has that, you know, that quirky little delivery that the Orioles wanted to change. And the Cubs kind of embraced and just said, okay, if you're comfortable doing it, you know, do that. He's kind of a crossbody guy, which is really rare in baseball because in reality, normally it leads to arm trouble, which is something he hasn't had at all during his career. You know, and you have to wonder, I mean, it's something, you know, major leaguers just weren't used to seeing. So now, you know, he's been around the National League many times. I mean, I do wonder if he signed with an American League team, if he would go out and have fantastic success, because they might not be used to that delivery. But yeah, you know, the National Leaguers now, I mean, you know what, he sees it's the Cardinals, the Brewers, the Reds, and who else, the Pirates, that division, what, they play each other 17 times.
17 times,
yeah. He probably pitched against them multiple times. You figure three times or maybe four, you know, over the course of now three full years as a starter. So they've seen it. You know, they've got tape on it. They know what to expect. So it's, well, I guess I should say video because nobody uses tape anymore, but I'm just kind of used to tape. So, yeah, you know, it's akin to just being caught up with, I think, is his problem.
Of course, he didn't have that great success with Baltimore, though, did he, in the American League?
No, well, that's because they messed with him. You know, they didn't want him throwing cross body, and they tried to change his windup. So, you know, and he just, yeah, he struggled greatly there. He was 20 and 25 with a 5.46 ERA. He started 63 games and pitched in 69. Over a course of four seasons. Of course, one year he only pitched in five games for him. But, yeah, it was, you know, they wanted his mechanics one way, and he just couldn't deal with it. You know, when you've been pitching one way your whole life, so, you know, it kind of worked out. But, you know, looking back, I mean, the Cubs got a hell of a deal there. I mean, not only did they get Arrieta, they got Pedro Strop, and all it cost them was Steve Clevenger and Scott Feldman. You know, and I know Feldman was having a fantastic year that year. That's why the Orioles wanted him. But, yeah, I mean, in reality, I mean, it was a steal for the Cubs. I mean, you know, Arrieta wins 22 games in a Cy Young, and then 18 the year they win the World Series. Strope's been a key to that bullpen. So just another real good move you know, Theo, Jed, and those guys, you know. So... you know, and obviously, you know, they saw something pitch naturally.
Yeah, and it really worked out well for him. I'm wondering, and this is another question. Once again, I have to rely on your expertise. But as you pointed out, his performance has gone down a little bit the last 2 years. And another pitcher who had great credentials in the American League did very poorly for the Cubs, Wilson. You think that's what caused the Cubs to make a pitching coach change?
You know, I wonder, you know, so much. You know, I think a lot of the reason the Cubs made a pitching change is because Joe Maddon's guy was available. You know, they were able to go get Kevin Hickey. Right. You know, I think that was more of the reason than anything else, you know, how that kind of worked out. So, but yeah, you know, Wilson is that guy. It's going to be interesting to see if he can bounce back. Cause I mean, you know, with the Tigers, he was rolling, you know, he had 13 saves, you know, his ERA was 2.68. He came over to the Cubs and his ERA ballooned to 5.09. And, you know, normally the pitcher's at the advantage because it's the first time these guys are seeing him.
Right.
And you kind of wonder what the hell happened to this guy.
And his control issues to boot were horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah, he had 19 walks and 17 and two-thirds innings. So
well,
that's not going to help you.
Well, if Hickey can help him and have him turn around the pitch akin to what he did when he was in the American League, that'll be a big, big plus for the Cubs in their bullpen.
You know, and that's going to turn out to be a big need because they can't sit on Brandon Morrow as an everyday closer with all the arm problems he's had. So they need guys like Justin Wilson and Steve Cishek to kind of regain that form they had so they can be used in those situations, because we've kind of proven that, you know, Carl Edwards Jr. doesn't look ready. Strope can't handle being a closer, and I don't want to see Justin Grimm or Brian Dunsing in the ninth inning to finish off a game. So, a guy like Justin Wilson is big for them.
Huge. I'm not even sure, by the way, that Grimm is going to make the team this year. I'm not at all convinced.
No, you know, he might not. I haven't really seen, like, you know, what their roster is going into spring training. I don't know who they brought with them as pitching. So, you know, the one thing about Grimm is he can pitch back-to-back games, which can end up being, you know, can end up being a big deal for a team. But, you know, he can take that Hector Rondon spot that Rondon left when he signed with the Astros.
Yeah, well, Rondon certainly did a better job overall pitching during his tenure here than Grimm did last season. Grimm was pretty bad last year. Of course, Strope wasn't very good either.
No, neither of them were fantastic. But, yeah, Grimm really had his struggles. His ERA was 5.53. That's never good coming out of your bullpen. So, you know, that seems to be the biggest issue there is, you know, how that bullpen is gonna bounce back. So,
well, every team has strengths and weaknesses, and if I were a betting man, I'd say the one thing that really concerns me is Cubs' closing situation. As you pointed out, I'm not sure about Morrow. He's had these injuries in the past. He had a good year last year, excellent year. But can he continue doing that? And can he step up to the closer's role?
Yeah, like I said, the biggest concern I have is him going back-to-back days. You know, I know he did it in the World Series. He tied that record by pitching in every World Series game.
Yep. Yeah,
so, you know, he was able to step up, you know, and do it there. You know, again, it's, you know, short outings, everything kind of worked out for him, you know, just, a two-thirds of an inning here, a third of an inning there, and that's how they, you know, they needed to handle it. So.
Yeah, he did very well in the World Series, no doubt about that.
But, yeah, it's just, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, again, we mentioned it yesterday. I mean, for some guys, there's a difference, you know, in getting three outs and getting the last three outs. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, Morrow can handle getting the last three outs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because the top of the division has improved. You know, Milwaukee made improvements. St. Louis made improvements. So it's it was tough last year. I assume it's going to be just as tough this year.
Yeah, I don't think St. Louis or Milwaukee has a strong starting five as the Cubs, though, and that's critical.
No, that's the one advantage. You know, the problem is starting pitching has been so, I guess in one way to put it, neutered as of late with just the cowardice of the managers to allow guys to try to work through trouble, that, it hurts the team in the long run. So you wonder how much of an advantage that actually is. And, and Joe Maddon's one of the worst ones. Like you mentioned, Arrieta had a lot of five-inning starts. A lot of it is because Maddon panicked. And the minute there was a sign of trouble, he was out. There was no, well, go out there, kid, and get yourself out of it. It was, no, we got to go to the bullpen.
Yeah, he did make quick changes, quick decisions in terms of the starting pitching last year, for sure.
You know what I mean? He's not the only manager that does that. There's a lot of guys that, don't allow their pitchers to work through stuff anymore for whatever reason. That's just kind of how the game has turned now. The bullpen is just so much more important than it used to be. It used to be the fact that you get your starter out there for seven, that setup guy works an inning, you bring in your closer. Yeah. Now you're praying you get five out of your starter, and then you got four different guys coming out of the bullpen to give you an inning apiece. Or in the right case, you got a fifth guy who's coming in just to get a lefty out. So,
ideally you'd want a starter to go six innings, though. At least six innings, but it doesn't seem to happen much anymore.
You would hope. No, I get it. Every manager is scared for his job. It's just kind of how it goes. Nobody wants to be fired. So, they run scared, worried about the fact that, oh my God, if we blow this game or if we blow this lead, it's going to be looked on that, I left him in there too long, or whatever. Or, now, the minute a guy hits 100 pitches, he's more or less out of the game.
That's it.
They don't even let him go to like 102 or 105. They see 100 and he's gone. And, it's just kind of like, well, again, you gotta, especially the young guys, you gotta let them work through this, but they don't see it that way.
Yeah, it's a different game of baseball played now for sure.
Because somebody's looking at their sabermetric metric sheet going, oh, wait, it says we got to take him out. Go get him. They're not,
right.
They don't, very few look at the game scenario and what's going on. If you think about it, if you've got a starter at 95 pitches in the National League and he's facing 7, 8, and 9, he should be able to give you that extra inning. Okay, maybe he goes to 105 or 110. That's okay, because it shouldn't be stressful. It's probably, the seven hitter, the eight hitter, and a pinch hitter. He should be able to get you through that inning. But no, instead, they're going to go to a bullpen. And, also the factor that everybody in the bullpen throws 100 miles an hour now. It's rare when a guy comes out of the bullpen and can't hit triple digits.
But this is why the bullpen will falter late in the season and in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're wore out. Guys are pitching, they're conditioned to pitch one inning. They're not used to being, being stretched out like relievers used to be. I know we've mentioned it before, but, guys like Goose Gossage and, Bruce Sutter used to get multiple inning saves.
Yeah.
So.
Mike Marshall, another one.
Yeah, we always laughed about that. I brought Mike Marshall's stats up to Dan one day. Do you know when I pulled it up here? 6 out of 162. I don't even know what the percentage of that is, but it's monstrous.
It is. Huge.
Imagine that in today's game.
Yeah. You can't imagine. It would never happen in today's game, would it?
And then to even spread it out even more, it six games, it covered 208 1/3 innings. So it wasn't just, because I know there are guys who come in and make 70 or 80 appearances in today's game, and they pitch 60 innings because they face one guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So 208 innings over 106 games. So, yeah, that's, I mean, that's unbelievable.
And you'll never see that again, I'm afraid.
No. You know, and I, like, you know, Marshall pitched in 14 different over those 14 years. Appeared in 724 games. You know, and there were a few years he was a starter, so he didn't, you know, he didn't make all the bullpen appearances. Not too many. He only had 24 starts in his career, but, you know, I mean, just, that's just insane.
Did he ever have any arm issues?
So.
I think he was pretty solid, you know, in terms of that. Very, very little in terms of injuries through the course of his long career.
Yeah, no, he, you know, obviously he stayed relatively healthy, you know, through his career to get there. What I was interested in, and I gotta look here. Yeah, you know, oddly, and this is something I'm kind of baffled by, he only stayed on the Hall of Fame ballot 1 year. He was eligible in 1987. He only got 1.5% of the votes.
Surprising. Very surprising.
You know, and I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer. I just, it's kind of embarrassing that he only managed to stick around 1 year.
Yeah, you think that he'd be able to be on the ballot for more years than that.
Yeah, so, you know, just kind of, you know, kind of goofy. I wanted to compare him here a little to see how he kind of worked out. You know, like a pitcher like, you know, Goose Gossage, let's see, the most games he ever appeared in was 72 in a year. But that also, that covered 133 innings.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it was, you know, multiple,
yeah.
You know, multiple innings every time
out.
It
wasn't 60. It wasn't 60 where, innings. You know, 60 innings, 65 innings.
Yeah, you know, like the guy they say who's the, you know, the greatest reliever of, you know, all time is Mariano Rivera. You know, everybody has kind of decided he's the guy there. Let's see. Games he ever pitched in was 71. Oh, no, here. 74 games in 2004. All right. So,
and how many innings?
He pitched 78 2/3 innings. So, you know, compare that to what Gossage did, and then try plugging that into that year Marshall had, you know, where he pitched 208 innings out of the bullpen. You know, that's, you know, that's 3 years or 4 years for, you know, for innings wise.
Yeah. And I'm not entirely convinced that he's the best reliever of all time either.
You know, well, you know, the reason that is because he pitched for the Yankees. If he had pitched anyplace else, nobody would be saying that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, just...
They have the mystique. The Yankees still have the mystique, and they always will.
Yeah. So, you know, and I believe, was he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Or did it take him... Is he up yet? Maybe he's not up yet. So,
well, he will be first.
No, I thought he was in. Yeah, he should be on. He retired in 2013, so he should be on this year. And yeah, you got to wonder if he'll probably go in first ballot. But yeah, those are some kind of interesting comparisons when you look at it there. You know, I mean, a reliever pitching 208 innings, starters don't even do that in today's game.
No, not even close.
So, you know, I mean, it's just kind of how the game has changed so much over the years. I'm trying to think. I know you and I think you and I brought this up before. You know, how many starters actually had, you know, those kind of innings. And if my, you know, again, it is raining out, so my computer is a little funky here, but let me see if I can, grab some innings totals here. You know, like I know I believe, you know, guys like Sale and Scherzer probably got past that number. But
right. Chris Sale's, I'm sure, got past that number.
.214 and a third, and Irvin Santana had .211 and a third. Jeff Samardzija was close at .207 and two thirds. So yeah, Marshall would have been the third leader in innings.
Yeah.
In this season.
Yeah.
Shows
you how much they used him.
I mean, that's just nuts. You know, when you kind of start pairing things up and. I know you'll be excited when I clicked on MLB.com. The headline story says Darvish strong first impression.
Oh.
So
he didn't have no arm issues yet, right?
No, nothing yet. I'm trying to figure out what he did. I would assume it was just a bullpen or something. You know, he's not facing anybody.
No.
So.
Well, it won't be long now.
But of course it's not an article. It has to be a video, so I can't actually check and see what they said about him while we're here. So
you don't want to do that, no. I'm wondering.
No,
about,
you know, just my luck. I wanted to see.
Yeah, right. Well, you're talking about Marshall and some of those other relievers that picked up all those innings. I would suspect, though, that their manager didn't rely all that much about the lefty-righty situation that they do now.
No, you know, I don't remember, you know, kind of thinking back and looking back that there were too many, you know, left-handed specialists back then. You know, they were really just, you know, relievers. I'm sure occasionally, you know, they played the matchup numbers and stuff, but it doesn't seem, I mean, obviously you got a guy throwing 208 innings. He faced everybody.
That's right.
So.
Yeah,
you know, I definitely couldn't.
Yeah, you'll have a left-handed specialist coming now, pitch, as you pointed out, coming in and pitching one third of an inning, and that's the extent of his pitching for the day.
That would just be frightening. Yeah. So. Again, I'm sure, you know, there was probably somebody out there. You know, of course, you wonder with Marshall throwing all those innings if they actually used anybody else. So I'll have to. I wonder, I think that was, what, 1974? I want to see who else was even in the Dodgers bullpen there that year. So I'll see what we can dig up here. All right. Well, they were 106 and 56 that year, so they had a pretty good year. They had Charlie Huff was in the bullpen. He pitched in 49 games. Jeff Zahn was actually a former Cub. He appeared in 21, and then Jim Brewer, 4 games. Zahn and Brewer were the lefties. Huff and Marshall were the righties. Other guys who came in, you know, must have been per injury, or maybe they were late season call-ups. Rick Roden, Greg pitched in 4 games, and then Rex Hudson pitched in a game. So
yeah, not too many games on those guys, for sure. As you pointed out, probably late season call-ups.
So yeah, you know, and then I mean, you look at like their number one starter was Andy Messersmith. He pitched 292 and a third innings. Don Sutton was next, Hall of Famer, 300-game winner, 276 innings. Their third starter was Doug Rau. He pitched 198 and a third. And then Tommy John was number 4. He pitched 153 innings. It looks like Zahn and then Al Downing was number 5. It looks like they missed some time due to injury because Greg Zahn made 10 starts that year. So he looks like he filled in while they were gone. But how about this for numbers? All right, you ready for this? Messersmith completed 13 games. Sutton completed 10. John had 5, Rao had 3, and Downing had, not only Downing had a complete game, so did Jeff Zahn. So as a team, they had what, 26, 27, 28, 33 complete games.
Yeah, compare that to the modern era of baseball now.
Yeah. So, and you look at it, I know, I don't believe Messersmith had arm problems. Neither did Sutton, neither did Doug Rao. Obviously, Tommy John is famous for the surgery that's actually named after him.
Right.
So, I know Downing had a really good career. I don't believe he had arm trouble. You look at the bullpen, Marshall never really did. Charlie Huff didn't. Zahn, not a great career, but he didn't. I don't remember Brewer having any arm trouble. You just got to, and it just makes me wonder more and more what the hell they're doing nowadays that these guys can't pitch.
Yeah,
when everybody else was pitching back here.
Yeah, and the modern medicine is stronger now than it was then, 40 years ago. Why these problems?
Yeah, I'm almost wondering if maybe the fact that we know more actually hurts the game because there's just too many concerns.
Yeah, it could be a factor.
Everybody gets panicked because, we know all this and, it's not a natural way to throw a baseball. Okay, we get that and all that fun stuff, but you just got to kind of start to wonder, these guys were throwing 300 innings and, they seem to be fine. I don't remember Bob Gibson having arm trouble or Fergie Jenkins having arm trouble McClain. I know Denny McClain had a whole lot of other problems, but arm trouble wasn't one of them.
Yeah, he has some other problems. Issues, yes, but not related to baseball though.
So, yeah, and you just, again, I know we seem to get hooked on this and go over it all the time, but there's just, what the hell is the answer? I don't know. So.
Yeah, it's strange. And I think part of it now is I don't know, some of these pitchers, they don't pitch enough to prevent themselves from having problems. They get in one. I don't know. Is it bad to pitch one batter a game, two batters a game? Does that keep you in shape, correct baseball shape, then, by doing that? Or could that be a hindrance too?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you would think they would know how to handle their off season. If you're rest and you're throwing programs or. Your lifting programs or whatever you've got going on that, it wouldn't be an issue for you, but for whatever reason, it seems like it is.
And it seems to start from day one in spring training. You'll see a little blur go. He's been held out, little tweak in his arm or other things going on that he won't be in for a couple of games. Yeah, a lot of times they say that, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing. And he keeps saying it's going to be nothing, and then he winds up the season on the DL list.
Yeah, and, I wonder, more and more if, maybe those guys kind of gutted it out that, they were worried about losing their spot, which is something that actually kind of happened back then. Now, you can go on the DL back in, to where you were.
I guess more of a warrior mentality than for some reason. That the manager, for example, wouldn't dare take out Gibson in the eighth or ninth innings. He would kind of give you the glare and say, okay, you continue. But you don't see too much of that anymore.
Yeah, I can just only imagine what it was like going to the mound to take a guy like that out. You go get a Gibson or a Drysdale or somebody like that. So.
Right. Yeah, I have seen instances, by the way, and I'm sure you have too over the years, that the starting pitcher will plead with the manager, give me one more batter, And the manager will say, all right. And then the next guy hits it out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of, you know, kind of, I just don't know if that, I mean, I'm sure it happens. I'm sure guys still ask, you know, hey, you know, let me stay one more guy or whatever. But, you know, who knows?
You're right, right. Now, you were talking about relief pitching and free agents before. And now, Howland still hasn't signed yet, has he? Greg Howland, is he signed or is he still?
No, he's not signed yet either. So
I wonder if he'll have to accept a one-year deal. As you pointed out, that could be some of these pitchers have to be going that
route.
Yeah,
you got it. Yeah, you know, because that's what he took last year. You know, coming off Tommy John, that was just kind of the deal. It was kind of like, hey, you know, we're going to need to, you know, make sure you can still pitch. And he did pretty well.
Yeah.
You know.
Didn't he have over 40 saves? Or I forgot now what the number.
Pretty close.
So he proved himself. I mean, that he's sound again, at least for now.
So yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, how, you know, it's weird with, you know, with teams, but I, you know, you just kind of, you know, you kind of wonder what they're.
Yeah, but time's wasting away for these guys, especially with the early start in spring training this year.